Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We'll begin with a local novelist who sets her story in North St. Louis. It's a tale about the interaction of a white house mother and her troubled teenage charges, most of whom are black, all living in a group home. Personal relationships, for better or worse, are at the heart of the book, The Middle Step, by Denise Pattis Bogard. She's also an educator and the former founder and coordinator of the St. Louis Writers Workshop. She joins me in studio. I guess I should say former coordinator, not former founder.
Right.
Denise, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Don.
Is it fair to say that you had to reach fairly deep for this one to get at your characters and get at the locale?
Well, it certainly is, of the three books, one, my first novel, this novel, and one that I'm currently working on, this novel is the one closest to my heart. And at that level, the girls, the four girls in the story, came very easily to me. I did have to reach much deeper for the main character.
Lisa, who is the house mother. We should point out that three of the girls in the group home are black, and one who ultimately arrives is white.
Right.
Well, you're a grandmother.
I am.
And the girls are 14. How does a grandmother reach into the mind and psyche and attitudes of 14-year-olds?
I have spent the past 16 years working at Lift for Life Academy, which is a 6th through 12th grade charter middle and high school. So I was very familiar with 14-year-olds. And because I taught writing there, I got to read their journals and their personal narratives and learned a lot about their own psyches and drew on those experiences. The school itself is 97% African American, 100% free and reduced lunch. So really, their experiences in large part shaped the whole story.
Give me some sense of what young girls are young black girls in particular, because they're the main characters in the book, what they're going through at age 14, particularly the group that you were talking about.
The kids I've worked with typically have a loved one who's been incarcerated, a loved one who's been shot. They are oftentimes homeless for periods of time. This isn't true for all the students, but it was true for so many kids that it became almost normal for some of the kids, the way they would write about it and talk about it, not without deep emotion, but not as out of the ordinary as they should have been able to have. And so at that level, it shapes them. It shapes children of poverty have extreme challenges, as we know. But then a lot of it's 14-year-old craziness, you know, which boyfriend you have or what to wear to the 8th grade graduation or prom or whatever.
A lot of them are damaged goods, as you've suggested, but I suppose a lot of them come through it somehow without being so damaged.
Right, right. I mean, it's amazing the sheer strength and courage that some of these kids, and resiliency that some of the kids have. There are kids that you know that they are homeless or that they are staying in one place one night and another place another night, and they come to school and they're still scoring high test scores and writing beautiful essays and determined to go to college. Many of the students that I worked with were first generation college students, mm-hmm. and some were first generation high school graduates.
Well, we should point out that another of the characters is a young white woman who also has similar problems. This is not something that's specific to one group or another.
Right, and that was important to me to bring in another race for a number of reasons, one of which is it's ultimately many of the challenges the girls face, it's ultimately about poverty level and not as much about the color of their skin. That said, the character Eva Lynn, who does come from rural Missouri and is white, faces many challenges in terms of her race at an all-black school in a home with three other girls who are all African-American.
It takes, I guess I can call it a period of adjustment for these young ladies to get to know each other. How did you see that at Lift for Life? And I know the population was as you indicated, overwhelmingly African-American. But there was interaction with white students. How did that work?
You know, one of the interesting things I discovered working at the school was that children of poverty tend to have a sixth sense, and they know intuitively who is in their corner and who is not. And a lot of teachers, I think, come to a school like Lift for Life to do good work, and they come with the best of intentions and find themselves overwhelmed by the challenges. And then there are the teachers where it is a very good fit, but it's hard to be neutral somewhere in the middle. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I think that there are teachers for whom the adjustment is fairly effortless, and teachers where it never fits and they don't last very long.
Well, let's talk about Lisa, your adult character in the book. And how did you go about framing her and her personality and her interaction with the kids?
When I first came up with the idea for the book, it was, of course, inspired in large part by my students, but it was also, I wanted to explore what is it like to be middle-aged living a life that doesn't match the life you always thought you would live. And that's Lisa's case.
She's only 39. Is she middle-aged in your book?
Okay, we can call her 39. What do we call her, a teenager at that point?
I'd call her a young adult.
A young adult.
That's what I would call her.
Right. I like that. Yeah. Okay, she's a young adult, and and actually her age is very important because her real challenge and disappointment in life is that she's not been able to have her own children. And it was important to make sure she was just at the tail end of childbearing years. But I wanted also to explore through her what happens when you impulsively change your life in a direction that you never meant to go. And that's what happens. She's desperate to be a mother in any way possible. And she sees an ad in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch to be a residential foster mother. And she figures, well, she's done debt counseling. She'll easily fit in with these girls. And she discovers it's very different to live with children than it is to work with children and drive home at the end of the day.
You know, one of the things I noted at least through half of the book, and it began to change, was that she seemed desperate to have the children love her.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it should have been the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And she grows to realize that too. And the social worker in the book realizes that right away. And, you know, she's a very flawed character. And I've done a number of book clubs, which I love because you get so much feedback.
Yeah.
But at every book club, somebody talks about not liking Lisa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wasn't my intention that she be necessarily likable as much as a sympathetic character. She's just coming out of a lot of disappointments in her own life, and she is not in a good place.
Yeah, a couple of miscarriages, including a set of twins. She was in a very vulnerable spot in her life when all of this was happening. Tell me about the neighborhood. The group home was located on Clara.
Right.
Tell us about that neighborhood.
Well, it was important to me that the neighborhood be in St. Louis and that it be in an area where there is a strong neighborhood watch group, but where she is herself the only white who she sees, so that her sense of race becomes very apparent to her on a daily basis.
Well, she shows up in a brand new car, which is a little out of place in that neighborhood. I was sort of expecting something to happen to that car during the course of the story, but I wouldn't say.
The next edition, it will. I know. That was something I didn't think about, but it probably would have.
Right. You know, it took you 9 years to write this book. That's a long time. What was the reason for extending the writing of it?
At the time that I was writing the book, I was working, raising children, married, and I would write for a while, put the book aside, come back to it. There was also there were a lot of times where the book was as good as I could make it at that point, but not good enough in my mind. And the way to try to improve your writing is to put it aside and come back with fresh eyes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned early on that you got a lot of your information from journals that were written by students of yours. How important is writing in terms of maybe catharsis, or for young people who are having difficulties in terms of dealing with some of those issues?
Oh, that's a great question. And that's where I really found my passion in teaching, was helping children to put their voices on paper. And even the most blocked writers have stories to tell. And I would tell the kids that, you know, if you sit next to a friend on the bus home and you're telling a story, if you go home and tell someone in your family a story, you've got stories that belong on paper too. And I think what happens is so many writing teachers and English teachers look at what's wrong with a piece of writing, and I very consciously always looked at what's right. So I gave them, I think, hopefully, permission to write their stories without editing themselves in first drafts. And it does provide a catharsis.
I would imagine that in some of those stories you saw some things that you probably never thought you would ever see or even believe, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And there were a number of students over the years where I had to red flag them because I felt that they were in harm's way, and would go to the school social worker. In fact, she used to joke that I gave her job security because, you know,
really?
I could read what the kids... And they knew, too, that if they wrote something in their journals they didn't want me to see, I would tell them they could fold the paper in half and I would honor that. Otherwise, they knew I was reading it and I was responding.
Are we talking about a small minority of those students, or was it a relatively common thing?
No, I would say a small minority of kids their lives were concerning enough that I actually red flagged them and they were hotlined. But all the kids had interest. Kids have interesting stories. And children, it's so much fun to teach teenagers because they're so completely self-absorbed that they just sort of willingly spill out their stories.
And yet some of them do have secrets.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I suppose because they're the very nature of the fact that they're secrets, you didn't or couldn't get to them.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, you have to respect that, too, and encourage them to at least find one mentor in the school. But one of the things that was really fun for me is I taught novel writing, too. And, in fact, three of my students worked hard enough on their novels over the years that it was publishable quality, and I helped sponsor them to self-publish their books. But the other thing is the kids knew I was working on a novel, and they would come in during the lunch break and work on their writing while I worked on mine, and they helped me create a cheat sheet, a glossary of all the slang that they use. So, you know, I would say to the kids, well, in my day, I might call him a loser, or he's Drek. What would you call him? Oh, Miss Bogart, I'd call him a hobo. Uh-huh. Or what would you call your boyfriend? He'd be my boo, you know, so.
Well, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of language in there, too.
Right.
That is typical, I'm sure, of young people today, but it's pretty salty stuff for the most part.
Right.
I'm talking with Denise Pattis Bogart. She is the author of The Middle Step. And we'll come back and continue our conversation. It's a book about young people in North St. Louis living in a group home. These are troubled kids, and the person who is in charge of them is also somewhat troubled. Back to continue our conversation with Denise in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Denise Bogart. She's the author of The Middle Step, a novel that is set here in St. Louis. And before we get too farther along, Denise, I should point out that you're going to be appearing at the St. Louis Public Library downtown. It's a few weeks away, on Saturday, October 29th, at the library's author shout-out, and you'll be discussing the book.
Right.
And you'll enjoy the library. It's fantastic now that they've done all that redecorating. Back to the book, The Middle Step. Did you find that in any sense you had to rely on stereotypes in writing it, or if not, how difficult was it to avoid doing that?
Ironically, the three African-American girls came to me very easily. It was the young white girl from rural Missouri, raised in a setting of having had a grandfather who was involved in the KKK, Grand Dragon, and she was the hardest for me to write. I don't know anyone like Eva Lynn. I felt like she was an important contribution to the story, but I had to stretch myself with her. The other three girls, I just knew them. I could hear them. I could see them.
Well, in stretching with Eva Lynn, the young white character, how did you go about forming her relationship with the three black girls? I mean, if that was a difficult, if that was a little bit of a stretch, that must have manifested itself also in forming that relationship.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, I think that when you write fiction, you first try to get to know your characters so that you know how your characters will respond. And I had to spend time with the characters. You asked earlier, why did it take 9 years? Mm-hmm. Part of why it takes so long to write a novel is it's a little bit like sitting on a bus next to somebody new, and you know immediately what that person looks like and how that person speaks, but there's so much you don't know. And then the more you get to know someone, the more you know you don't know. It's the same with a character. So the answer is just trying to get to know Eva Lynn. She was tough for me because she's my least favorite character. Mm-hmm. And I kind of fell in love with the other three girls. And even at the end, I felt badly for Eva Lynn, but I'm not sure I ever loved her.
Let's talk for a moment about how different the three other girls were. Denisha is one of them, and I think that's one that people, as they read the book, might not care for too much, but...
But she was actually my favorite of the girls. Denisha's very high-spirited. In many ways, well, I can't even say the most damaged. They're all damaged. But she was the one who I had the most fun writing. Brianna is, she's got a tough life. They all have a tough life. Mm-hmm. Brianna's quieter, and she's the one who, well, I shouldn't say.
Falls by the wayside in some respects, yeah. And then, still waters run deep. She was quiet, but, yeah.
And then Corrine is a child who's been passed around her whole life. And she's lived in many family homes. She's, you know, her father, her mother, her auntie, her grandma, back to her auntie, back to a friend of the friend. And she's been through multiple schools. And I do know students who have been through that. And they never get to have roots. And they never get to really develop relationships. Mm-hmm. And it was a funny experience for me as a writer because I found myself kind of putting Corrine aside, not knowing her as well as the others. And that was okay because she was no trouble, and she's no trouble in the book. And one day I realized that I was doing to Corrine what everyone in the book has done to Corrine. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my God, that's character abuse. I need to spend time with her. So I wrote a number of vignettes with Corrine, got to know her better. And I think in many ways she winds up being the most sympathetic of the girls.
Yeah. How much of a character is St. Louis in the book?
That's a very good question. Interestingly, The timing of the story is that 3 weeks, I received a publisher's contract for the book in July 2014. 3 weeks later, Michael Brown was shot. Ferguson became a household name. Black Lives Matter, in many ways, originated from Ferguson. And St. Louis is almost more of an important setting post-publishing than it was during the writing. During the writing, I think it's important because St. Louis is so polarized. And a character like Lisa, I have an agent in New York, and she had a hard time at first believing that Lisa could have been that naive. Mm. And I said, you don't know St. Louis.
Yeah. So there were references, obviously, to places that we all know. Forest Park is one. There are also other things that you tackle in the book to some degree that are interesting. One is online dating, and another is Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. Lisa's father is afflicted with Alzheimer's disease. Why did you bring these particular issues into the book? Were they important to the story?
The parent with early Alzheimer's, I wanted Lisa to have other choices, other obligations, and more conflict, frankly. So I had her have a parent out of town facing a crisis that also pulls her in many directions. The online dating was just sort of for fun.
Mm-hmm. Getting this whole thing going over the period of time that you wrote it, was your motive to, I think I have a pretty good story here, or was it perhaps more to promote and generate a racial element of racial understanding?
Maybe a little bit of both. Mm. You know, I feel that I have had experiences that most of my peers have not had, and I felt like I really wanted to tell their story and create maybe a deeper understanding of what girls in North St. Louis mm-hmm. of poverty are living with. But it's also the story drove the story, mm-hmm. if that makes sense, yeah. for me.
Is it autobiographical in any sense?
Well, every novel is, isn't it? But I've been really much more fortunate than Lisa. Mm-hmm. I have a wonderful husband. I have 3 great children. I have grandchildren. I had an easy time relating to my students. Not to say I didn't have large difficulties and a lot to learn as a teacher, but a lot of the experiences with the children do mirror my own. And yes, there are parts. I'd rather not say which part's on air, but there are certainly parts that are autobiographical.
People will have to read it and try to figure that
right,
part of that out.
Right, right.
One final question, the title, The Middle Step. People might be wondering what that is in reference to.
Well, it's actually the 4th title, and it was my publisher who asked me to change the 3rd title, which was The Gift House, and she didn't like it. She said it sounds like a Christmas story.
So now that's the name of the group home we should
right.
put it, The Gift House.
Yeah. Right, thank you. And so I went back to start thinking about, well, what new title? And The Middle Step serves as a middle step for where these characters are. There's also a middle step that can't be fixed, that becomes the metaphor for what can't be fixed.
Part of the house.
But I did have an interesting conversation with somebody at a book club. I've done a number of book clubs. I get so much feedback. I love doing them. And one woman, after the book club ended, came up to me and said, you know, I think in many ways our country is in a middle step in terms of race relations. And I really love that. You know, where we've been that isn't working, where we hope to go but aren't there.
Well, this very day and this very season, political season, is evidence of that. Well, Denise Bogard, thank you so much for being with us. Again, the title of the book is The Middle Step, and Denise will be participating in the St. Louis Author Shoutout October 29th at the St. Louis Library downtown. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Don.
And the book's available wherever good books are sold.
At Left Bank Books and at the Bookhouse in Maplewood, as well as online through everywhere.
Great. Good. Well, good luck with the book. Thank you once again for being with us.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.